I'm going to call the State Government Finance Committee to order. Members, in your packets, you have the meeting minutes from March 14th. If Representative Kunesh Podine wants to move those minutes.
I approve and move.
Representative Kunesh Podine moves the minutes for March 14th. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the minutes are adopted. Members, we have several of like bills before us today dealing with armories. And so what I think I'm going to do is any of the legislators that are here with an armory, I've got a Representative Knobloch, Representative Wills. I see Representative Lehman's in the audience. And is Nornes here? Oh, okay, I didn't see you. And Representative Nornes, if you all four want to come to the table, what I'd like to do is for each one of you to speak to one of your to your bill. And then we're going to turn it over to Mr. Kerr in case you guys have other things to do, if you have other bills to present and whatnot. So we're going to start with Representative Knobloch, then Representative Wills, then Representative Nornes, and then Representative Lehman. Chair Knobloch.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3160 is a bonding proposal for the National Guard Readiness Center for State Armory in St. Cloud. This facility was built, among other things, before women were in the armed forces. And even though we have a large complement of women there now, we only have one small bathroom to service those women service people. And for a number of other reasons, the building is over 50 years old. It is really inadequate and in need of renovation, and so I'd appreciate your support. Don Kerr, Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs, will be here to provide more information.
Okay. And for technical purposes, I'm going to move the House File 3160 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment without recommendation. That's how we've been handling all the bonding requests. Thank you, Chair Knobloch. Representative Wills, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And House File 3275 is for a bonding request for $10.5 million for the National Guard Readiness Center in Rosemount. And Don Kerr is going to give the details of that proposal. I have to rush off to another committee for another bill and present.
Very good. And I'm going to move House File 3275 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment without recommendation. And Chair Nornes.
Madam Chair, House File 3067 is a bonding proposal for the National Guard Armory in Fergus Falls, and I think it's probably about the same age as the armory that we heard President Representative Knobloch talk about in St. Cloud. So it's in dire need of some updating.
Okay. And I'm going to move House File 3067 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment without recommendation. Thank you, Chair Nornes. Representative Lehman.
Madam Chair and Committee, I'm here to present House File 3066, and this is for funding of the renovation of the Grand Rapids Armory. This is a 64-year-old facility that's never had a comprehensive rehabilitation. And again, Don Kerr, Executive Director, is here to provide all the details. I would also like to mention, Madam Chair, that Representative Polston is here, and I, on his behalf, he will be having a bill on the Wadena Armory as well that's not in front of you right now.
Very good. Thank you. And I'm going to also move House File 3066.
Thank you.
Be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment without recommendation. So now, Mr. Kerr, if you could. Each one of these we're going to take one by one. We're going to start with Chair Knobloch's. Or, Mr. Kerr, maybe you can help us through this, too.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs. And let's see where I'm at here. Okay, that'll work. Madam Chair, the agency's total request has six projects in it. The first one is the St. Cloud Armory. The total request for the agency is $25.578 million, and I will speak to each of the projects in some detail and also take any questions that the committee may have. And I'm going to jump to the projects first and then come back to the funding history. Although I kind of like that chart. We're going to show you that one later. So, Madam Chair, this is the, let's see, how am I doing on Zoom? I probably need to go a little larger. And, of course, members have these packets.
Oh, perfect. Members, we're on page 9 of the packets, if that's helpful.
Page 9 of the packet, and as the chair articulated, this is a 58-year-old facility. And, Madam Chair, I have briefed, I think, in the committee last year about our Readiness Center Transformation Master Plan that discusses where we expect to stay in Minnesota. And St. Cloud is one of those communities that we definitely intend to stay in. You will note that this is one of our port facilities, and we have known this for a while. We've kind of had this in the queue, and St. Cloud is one of the carry-forwards from our previous bonding proposal. It was not supported in the past, and we really think it's important to put this in. Typically, when we go into a facility like this, we try to do a lot of projects at one time. Generally, those include the roof, the boiler, upgrade of the electrical systems, because electrical code changes much more frequently than one would expect. We generally have to do ADA compliance upgrades, and as Chair Knobloch mentioned, particularly in St. Cloud, all of these armories of that older era were generally built like the Capitol was originally, without much consideration for female occupancy, even on a visiting process. So we have requirements to add locker rooms, shower facilities, restroom facilities for females in the facilities. And the other thing that's really significant is we have to have a lot of storage space. When we go back to the early days of the National Guard, you were issued a pistol belt and a canteen, and that was it. And now our service members are getting four duffel bags and a hard case full of equipment that's worth several thousand dollars that is supposed to be stored in the armories. The challenge that we have, particularly in our older facilities, is we simply don't have space to store that stuff properly, and that results in a lot of loss to the government, because I can't tell you how many documents we have to process that they're called FLIPLs, and I can't remember the name of the acronym right now, but when somebody loses stuff that the government owns, an investigation has to be conducted, and the FLIPL is conducted to determine liability. And a lot of equipment is stolen out of cars, out of garages, because it can't be stored in the armories because we simply don't have the space. So we think that there will be a great savings to the federal government just by being able to store the equipment in the armories the way we're supposed to be able to do. That's a big deal for us. The maintenance capacity in the facilities is a big deal for us. And that kind of sums it up, Madam Chair.
Okay. Members, any questions regarding the St. Cloud Armory in particular? Representative Kunesh-Poudin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a question, but I would support the bonding cost for this. I grew up in Sartell. St. Cloud was an important part of my life. My father was the St. Cloud City Attorney early on in the years of the Armory. I remember going to quite a few of those events that were held there and waiting outside to use a bathroom because of the lack of bathroom for women. So I appreciate the fact that that you have this here to maintain a building that has strong historic and sentimental value in St. Cloud. Thank you.
Members, any other questions? Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just likewise, I just like to support this project. Being on the Capital Investment Committee, we toured, and it was pretty powerful to see the storage and how bad it is and the condition. And so I know you're great stewards of the money and the compounding factor with federal money often with these. And so I think all these projects are, I'm sure, quite good. But I know this one for sure is, having walked down the halls and seeing especially that storage, those storage areas were really horrible. So, yeah, thank you for this.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just curious, I see there's a 1,500-square-foot addition. What size is the building? Do you know? Hate to ask that. It's special, but maybe it's available. Just curious what the size of these are, and I agree with the other people. When I was at Capital Investments, toured these buildings, and they are all in need of repair.
Mr. Kirk?
Madam Chair, Representative Vogel, the St. Cloud National Guard Armory is 40,373 square feet, and we're doing a roughly 1,500-square-foot addition. That's an infiltration of an existing courtyard area, so it won't actually expand the footprint of the building on the lot, but it does give us an extra 1,500 square feet of space in addition to the 40,000 already there.
Thank you.
Representative Vogel. Members, any other questions? If not, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 3160 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment without recommendation. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? It's on its way. Thank you, Chair Knobloch.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Mr. Kerr, which one do you want to do next?
Madam Chair, I guess next in the bat order looks like We're going to go to Grand Rapids. So the Grand Rapids facility is 64 years old.
And just for members' sake, that is House Bill 3066 and page 12.
12 in your packet. Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. So a similar story. Grand Rapids, we have not done a major renovation. I believe we did put a roof on that facility a few years ago, but we really need to go in and do some more comprehensive things, including some ADA compliance in this particular facility. A similar problems, we have upgrades that we need to do in the showers, both for males and females. And this is a smaller footprint facility, and just because I've got the document here, Grand Rapids is 19,800 square feet, so roughly half the size of St. Cloud and about half the cost. Again, all of these projects will be matched dollar for dollar with federal funding, so we think it's a good bang for the buck. And we believe that by doing these investments now, that'll buy an extra 20 to 30 years on the building when we do these renovations.
Mr. Kerr, any what a kind of maintenance cost from the state perspective going out into the future?
So, Madam Chair, that actually brings up a great point. Well, I was going to get to that later as we start talking about our larger facility. So there's kind of a longer story.
We can save that for later.
Let's save that for later, Madam Chair, and I will talk about that.
Okay, members, any questions on House File 3066? All right. If not, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 3066 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment without recommendation. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The bill is on its way. Mr. Kerr, would
Madam
you like
Chair, that? Rosemont next, if you don't mind, number 13, page 13 in your packet.
House File 3275. And you said 13, you said?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Madam Chair, this is the largest of our projects, and this is probably where I'll shift into my storytelling mode here to talk about this. So 100 years ago, armories were built when communities came forward and asked the permission of the Adjutant General to build them at their own cost so that they could be then absorbed by the National Guard. Obviously, that system has changed dramatically. We got adequate facilities for what we needed at the time. However, our requirements have changed dramatically. For example, what we needed 100 years ago was pretty much two offices, a classroom, and a drill floor to conduct drilling ceremonies and an arms vault. And now we've had tremendous increases in what our requirements are, which is why some of our facilities are getting bigger. However, we have found many of our particularly rural organizations have small units in them that don't necessarily require ginormous facilities. But we've been trapped a little bit by the federal government. So normally when we construct a new armory, we get on to something called the Future Year Defense Plan and get an armory approved. And the armories, when they're constructed, are generally constructed 75% federal, 25% state. Now, the last decade or so has allowed us to game the system a little bit because as the Army transformed during the Long War, the Congress passed some laws that allowed 100% federal funding under certain circumstances. For example, if you had a unit that was affected by something the Army called transformation, you were authorized for 100% federally funded facility. If you were affected by a program called Grow the Army, which was a new unit added to the structure of the Army, you were authorized 100% federal construction. And so the facilities we built for about the last, I'm going to say 15 years, since about 2004, have really all been taking advantage of that 100% federal funding. The other trick that the feds got us in is when we put in for these projects, they're allocated kind of on a rotational basis with a cap of $20 million. Well, the challenge with that is that incentivizes the state to build $20 million buildings, whether you need them or not. And so what we're, and that sounds really good until 30 years later, the $20 million building needs a roof. And you realize that if you'd bought the $5 million building that you needed, you'd only be paying it for a quarter of the roof space. So we're in a situation where we're trying to figure out how to leverage the federal government to change their rules to allow us to conduct more projects with the same dollars. So perhaps we can get three facilities instead of one out of these $20 million. Well, brings me back to Rosemont. Rosemont is one of the first really large facilities that we were able to construct. Rosemont square footage is somewhere less than a spreadsheet in my pile of papers here. The Rosemont National Guard Armory is 458,000 square feet. So it's a pretty big barn. We're also integrated with the community there, so the city has a share in it as well. In fact, they have a skating rink and a little kind of auditorium thing and a banquet center that's in the building, and we think it's a great relationship because our partnership with Rosemont, we need classrooms, but we only need them on weekends. Well, they have city programs where they need classrooms. They only need them during the week, and so they use the classrooms during the week. We use them on the weekends. We have shared use of some of the other space. We think it's been a great investment, but now the bird is coming home to roost here, and it's time to do a bunch of renovation in Rosemont. We have this really big facility, and so that's why you're seeing that this is going to be a $21 million project to do this renovation. And as I stated, $20 million bucks is about what we're spending on brand new construction. So what we're really trying to look at as we evolve our Readiness Center Transformation Master Plan is how do we limit the number of really big armories to the places where we need really big armories and find a way to construct new, smaller armories. Not really related to what we're doing here today, but an important part in understanding the story.
It is, and I do appreciate that, Mr. Kerr. Members, questions on that at all? Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kerr, for the Rosemont facility here, you say there's going to be a backfill unit in there sooner or later. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. Mr. Kerr.
Madam Chair, and that did come up, in Representative Uglum, that did come up in other testimony. So one of the other things that we're doing from a timing perspective, Rosemont is also a facility that we might have been able to wait a couple of years, and the price is also going to be increased because we have to do some interior reutilization of space because the 34th Division is going to move out of Rosemont, and they're going to move into the Arden Hills facility that we'll begin constructing as soon as the federal government passes a budget, hopefully next week, but not probably. Hmm. And that's actually been delayed some time. But we really think it's important to hit the sweet spot here while the 34th Division is scheduled to deploy right now, and we want to be able to get in while the unit's out before we backfill it with a new unit. We want to do that renovation before we put that in. So that's part of the timing on this.
Any other questions, members? Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Kerr. Could you explain to the committee how the Army has changed, the equipment has changed, the types of units that we have is changing over there, whether it's the 34th or the Air National Guard, just based on the equipment that has something to do with the type of facilities we need?
Mr. Kerr.
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, thank you for that question. So obviously the Army has evolved a lot, and the force structure inside the National Guard changes periodically. Minnesota has retained some of the kind of most expensive force structure that exists out there, driving M1A1 tanks, going to M1A2 tanks, Bradley fighting vehicles, and somehow in our infinite wisdom, we buy these new weapon systems, and no one accounted for the fact that the armory we built in 1954, the tank won't fit in the garage. And so now we have to go in, and if you've ever tried to put a bigger garage door in a brick garage, you're basically starting over. It's really a problem, and we have this problem with howitzers and tanks, and all those things just keep getting bigger, and the storage components that go with those. So an M1 tank is a big piece of metal, but it's also got a lot of things that are called components of the end item that have to be stored independent of the tank when they're not manned by a crew member because sometimes there are some security issues, and so you need larger vaults, more of them, more storage space, and different kinds of storage space.
Members, any other questions? All right. I am going to renew my motion that House File 3275 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment without recommendation. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? And Mr. Kerr, 3067.
Yes, Madam Chair, Fergus Falls. So, Madam Chair, Fergus Falls facility, 63 years old.
Page 14, members.
Page 14 in your scorecards. You'll also notice a facility condition index of poor. About the same size as the Grand Rapids facility, about the same age, and so very similar requirements. And that actually gives me a good opportunity to talk about, so where do these numbers come from? And there are a couple of things we have going on. First of all, we do have the maintenance backlog information that is maintained in the Archivist database. We use that as the basis for beginning where we are because those are known faults that we know we're going to have to fix, and we have an estimated cost. But we then make adjustments to that by talking to the unit that's going to be in the facility or is in the facility to say, okay, what repurposing do we need to do? And if they come back and say, well, this used to be an all-male unit, now we're going to a 50-50 female-male unit, obviously we have to add more locker space. And so we have to make changes to the interior of the building. Or if there's a special capability for the unit that's scheduled to go into the facility, Sheriff Detmer used to be an intelligence officer in the Army Reserve, so he knows there are these things called SCIFs, Secure Compartmented Information Facilities, that have very high security requirements and also shielding requirements so that they are resistant to electronic intrusion. And those things are very expensive to do. They're really expensive to do when you're retrofitting. But all of those things weigh in, so the mission of the unit that's going to be assigned there plays a role in what's going in. But so for these facilities, we take a look at, okay, what are the known things we have to fix, and then what changes do we need to make the facilities appropriate for the type unit that's going to be assigned there.
Okay, great. Members, any questions? If not, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 3067 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment without recommendation. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right. And Mr. Kerr, any other final comments?
Madam Chair, if I could just get back to the history aspect of this. I've got to get my pretty chart in here because we're really proud of this one. So obviously we know that Russ never sleeps, and all of the agencies are going to come to you with stories of how their buildings are falling down. Some of them are awfully compelling. I hate following corrections whenever we're doing one of these briefings. they really need some money. But we are looking at this and taking a longer view. And the first thing I want to do is thank this committee, because to a great extent, our real problem with maintenance has been that we were underfunding it forever. And a couple of years ago, Madam Chair, we came to you and asked for a restructure of our base budget to put more money into our maintenance appropriation. And we really think that over the long term, that's going to turn the corner for us. We also recognize that we need to divest of some facilities that we have, because we can't afford to keep everything if we don't need it. And we've done quite a bit of work looking at where do we need facilities based on the demographics that are currently there and the projections for the future, and also based on what state active duty missions we've had to perform in the past. For example, we probably want to maintain a presence in Moorhead for a number of reasons, but doing an annual or so flood fight out of the Moorhead Armory is one of those reasons. It's an important one. We need to make sure that we are able to operate in the state of Minnesota. And so there's some pressure from the national level to divest of as many facilities as possible. In fact, frankly, if the guys at the national level were making these decisions, the only place there'd be any armories is at the intersections of two interstate freeways, because they believe if we just have a couple, three facilities, we could then have all the soldiers drill there, and we only have to maintain a couple of facilities, and they're easy to get back and forth. We feel that's a mistake, and it doesn't meet our community role in as the National Guard is part of our communities. And so we looked really hard at where we needed to be, and we are in the process of doing a reduction of from 64 facilities down to, I believe the end state is 51. We are continuing to refine that number over time. We're going to do that through a combination of straight divestitures. For example, we no longer have a presence in Northfield. We successfully sold the Northfield Armory to a local developer who's running a business out of that, and we were able to take the proceeds of that sale and roll those into the maintenance appropriation. And so they're deferring some of our maintenance costs. We're also in the process of looking at where we can consolidate facilities. For example, Crookston and Thief River Falls, we currently have an armory in both places. We know that that probably isn't a good long-term solution, and we have adequate land in Crookston to do a renovation at some point to the existing Crookston Armory, make it bigger so that we can absorb both units in there and make that Thief River Falls Armory come off of our rolls. So we're looking at those, and we're trying to do it in a very thoughtful way, and a way that we think we can continue to provide support. But the chart I've got up is there are three lines on the chart. The blue line, going back to the year 2000, and what we found is prior to 2000, we didn't do very much. We didn't think ourselves part of the bonding process, so we really didn't ask for much. But the top line is what the agencies identified as a requirement that we feel or felt at the time we needed to maintain our facilities over the long term. The green line, the one in the middle, is the amount of funding that the governor supported in his bills. Various administrations going back to, I think, Ventura, maybe even before Ventura. And then the red line is the amount that the legislature has funded in those. And as you can see, in the last decade, we've kind of been hurting on this thing. Now, we did get that one really big bump in 2012. We're very appreciative of that. That is the money that built the Education Center addition at Camp Ripley. And we think that's an extremely good investment that all state agencies are using, along with some community organizations, local law enforcement, and other entities. That was a really good investment for the people of Minnesota. I also want to note that that particular facility, we've been able to move on to federal installation support plan, so the funding to maintain that facility is now being carried 100% by the feds.
Well, I'm going to pause you right there. Mm-hmm. You know, just talking about that in particular, I think Camp Ripley is kind of a shining example. For these others that we're considering here or have before us today, whether it's Fergus Falls or Rosemont or St. Cloud or Grand Rapids, what are the plans to make that a multi-agency or entity use facility? What are you looking to do that kind of mirrors what you're trying to do in Camp Ripley?
Madam Chair, actually, I think in almost every one of those facilities, we currently have contracts with the Department of Public Safety to do driver training there.
And what about local units of government?
Local units of government, we have access to those facilities and it varies by municipality what level of engagement we have with them. Generally, in the renovations, we have not opened ourselves up to community partnerships unless one already existed. We are doing that in Rosemont, obviously, and we're asking them to do their renovation at the same time. That's another important factor, the timing. But in the other communities that we're renovating, I don't think we have partnerships with the local communities like we do, for example, in Inver Grove Heights in Rosemont and Montevideo, where the high school is built in conjunction with the Armory.
Well, if I could, I would recommend that you seek them out if you could, because I think that we could get some economy of scale of having multiple, whether it's local units of government or other state agencies to use some of these facilities. It might help to alleviate the backlog that you're looking at, too.
Madam Chair, we'll take that under advisement. We do that with all of our new construction,
right.
But we haven't been doing that with the renovated facilities, and that's a good point. We might have an opportunity while we're breaking open the seal to get in and do something that would be useful in a local community, and we'll look into that.
Appreciate that. Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair and Mr. Kirk, could you just briefly explain to the committee here what the TAG or the Adjutant General in the past have done for security for these facilities? Because other states have had some problems.
Mr. Kirk.
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, thank you. That's another great question. Sometimes a difficult one to answer, and so this is another place where we're kind of caught in the middle between what the feds want to do and what we think is right for the local communities. I was the officer in charge in Rosemont on 9/11, which is, they have a very heavy community presence there. They have the Parks and Rec Department is right there in the building with us, and we did exactly what the feds told us to do, locked all the doors, threw away the keys, started thinking about where we're going to get concertina wire to get adequate standoff because the terrorists were coming around the corner, and about 10:30 in the morning, we have this one long hallway that terminates in a wooden door, and it's literally 35 or 40 feet long. And I just happen to be passing through the hallway, and at the far end, I hear, it was my good friend Maureen, who at the time was the Parks and Rec Director in Rosemont, and I went down and opened the door and poked out, and she looked at me with these big eyes, and she said, "What are we supposed to do?" I said, "I don't know, Mo. Well, don't worry. It's okay. We don't think the terrorists are coming." But it brought to light a real challenge that we have is while we're trying to reach out to our communities and make them close partners, at the same time, we have these federal requirements to protect our force and our equipment and our facilities. And strangely, as we've gone through these machinations, what we've kind of figured out is our real issues are protecting our people. And we had a big problem with this about, okay, so what do we do to rent an armory? If we're not supposed to let anybody in, how the heck do we rent it? And this was a big problem. Well, just stop renting them. No, that's not right. These things are built with public money. They're resources in the communities. We have to find a way to get there. And we kind of figured out that, well, what we really need to do is while our people are there, lock all the doors and don't let anybody in. And then at night when they go home, unlock the doors and let the public have their way with the place. It doesn't really matter. Because if our people aren't there, they're not in danger of someone attacking them there. That argument is very difficult to make at the federal level. They just don't get what we're talking about. But we have to struggle with these security issues all the time. And part of the way we do that is by how we design structures that we're working with partners on. So, for example, we just opened the Stillwater facility, and we have actually the fire department, one of the fire departments for the city of Stillwater is in there on one end of our building. And we went through great pain to make sure we hired the same architect so that we could work together and figure out how can we provide access to them while still retaining a little bit of a buffer and a way for us to shut ourselves off and have our shared space in the middle of those two. And that's how we're operating with that. So we have key card systems that they have access to some parts of the building. We have access to some parts of the building. But it's a very delicate dance, but we're working hard to try to make sure that we are being as open as possible to community use of our facilities across the state.
Representative O'Driscoll?
I'll think about it, Chair. To Mr. Kerr's first inquiry about, and yours as well, about joint facilities, we're still open to that. And Sartell, from our previous discussions. Secondly, and it's probably long past, but Mr. Kerr, you mentioned in your testimony that you want to keep a presence in Moorhead for obvious reason, and then you went on. And I was wondering if tensions with North Dakota are escalating and that's why we need to maintain a presence, or if it's the Minnesota River, which is prone to flooding, that we're more concerned about.
Mr. Kerr. Chair. Is North Thank Dakota you, coming Chair. After us because we make fun of their capital? Or?
Well, no. I was going to talk about easy access for those pesky Canadians, but that's my reference was, of course, to fighting the floods in the Red River. And, because we base out of Moorhead and then work all the way north as the flood proceeds on the way up there. We've kind of done that a couple of times. We're hoping we don't have to, but it'll be a while before all the dirt gets moved to make that work. So,
Madam Chair, I did see several members stirring and looking at each other, so I wanted to put tensions at rest for the public today.
Sounds good. Members, any other questions? Representative Omar.
Thank you, Chair. So I'm looking at all of this, and it looks like they all need immediate attention. And I realize that you have sort of ranked them in priority. But some of the ones that you have, like Fergus Falls, in comparison to the Wadena, the number of years that the facilities have been operating doesn't really match. So you would think the older ones would be the ones that we have the higher priority in funding and getting fixed. But there's no correlation, so I just wanted to understand how you all decided to prioritize these projects. And if there was a consideration made to whether a facility could face closure because we're not fixing it, and if those ones rose to be of higher priority or not.
Mr. Kerr.
Madam Chair, Representative Omar. So the age is not necessarily the only determinant factor, because we may have gone in and done roofs or boilers or some combination of things. And the other thing that we find is there's a great disparity in the quality of the product that we received at any given time. One of the charts in the presentation early on, the map with the ages of the facilities, you'll note that we do still have three on the books that are over 100 years old. And in some cases, so New Ulm, I'll use New Ulm as an example. New Ulm is one of our Centurions, and New Ulm has got a lot of problems in the facility, but we also know that New Ulm is our number one priority for replacement, and we intend to pick up 100% federally funded replacement for the New Ulm facility. So we have some facilities that we know we're basically just going to run them till they blow, and I'll use West St. Paul as an example of that. The West St. Paul facility is in dire need of renovation, but we've looked at the site, and we've determined that we can't reasonably expect to stay in the current location of West St. Paul because it's landlocked, doesn't meet our needs, and we can't be a good neighbor there, because when our soldiers come there to park, they take over the entire neighborhood, and it's just not a good situation. At the same time, we worked with the city of West St. Paul. They were not able to come up with a logical or acceptable land solution for us. And so at some point, the boiler is going to break in West St. Paul, and we're going to close that facility and make it available to the public market and then reassign the unit somewhere else. So there are a whole bunch of things that go into our plan as to, first of all, we had to decide where are we going to stay, and then what do we have for facilities, what's their current state of repair, and where do they fit in the priority? Are we going to replace them or repair them, or invest in them by expanding them? All of those things, and we did a report on this called the Readiness Center Transformation Master Plan, and I'll make it available to the members of the committee so you can look at that to see the rigor that we went through. And we actually rank ordered all of our facilities showing where they are. With regard to how we know what the maintenance status is, we actually have a team of maintenance guys that go around, and we had to go through a very comprehensive engineering estimate of all of our facilities when we completed that Readiness Center Transformation Master Plan that was required by the federal government. And so we have that data, and we update that data quarterly, All that data is available in the Archibus system. We use that state system to track it. And so there are a number of variables that go in. The most important to us is looking at where we want to operate and then looking at what resources we have available to operate there.
Representative Omar.
Thank you, Chair. I was just curious, and thank you for letting us know that there's a master plan and that there is reasoning behind the kind of priorities you put forth. In some of the other committees that I sit on, a lot of the requests sometimes don't really make sense in the way that they set their priorities. So I just wanted to get a clear sense that you all did, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Kerr, appreciate the presentation. Thanks for your time today. We have Representative Poston's bill up next, House File 1318. I'm going to move House File 1318. And Representative Poston, I want to talk about this a little bit. I think what we're going to do for now, we are going to send it to the Public Safety Committee, but we should probably talk a little bit later on some other things, too. But for now, we're going to send it to Public Safety, okay? With that, I'm going to move House File 1318 be referred to the Committee on Public Safety. And Representative Poston, to your bill.
Madam Chair, before I go to the bill, this is my first time in front of your committee. So I brought some treats that they're going to hand out.
All those in favor?
So, Madam Chair, House File 1318 is a veterans preference and hiring bill. And currently, the state has veterans preference and hiring in almost every area of state government with the exception of the court system and the legislature. So this is adding those two entities into a practice that already exists. And with me today, I have Ben Johnson. He's the legislative director of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and I'd like him to talk to this just a little bit.
Mr. Johnson, it's been a long time. How are you doing?
I'm well, ma'am. Thank you.
Good. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chair Anderson, members of the committee, my name is Benjamin Johnson. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. An enthusiastic supporter of Mr. Poston's House File 1318. We're excited at the opportunity to expand veterans' preference to the legislature and the courts. I'm going to give you a quick background and then take questions in the interest of your time. Veterans' preference in Minnesota has been around since 1887, which is about the same time that the state of Minnesota developed the first veterans' home in Minneapolis, a historic veterans home at the Minneapolis campus, which is currently still in use. The legislature stated that honorably discharged Union soldiers and sailors shall be preferred for employment in every public department of the state of Minnesota, counties, towns, cities, and villages thereof. In 1907, they added Civil War veterans employed by the state could only be discharged for incompetency or misconduct after a hearing upon due notice and stated charges. The goal of veterans' preference in hiring in this particular case is to help facilitate the transition of veterans from the military to civilian life and help compensate veterans for their sacrifices, including sacrifices to health and time in the community. Veterans' preference in hiring grants most veterans limited preference over non-veterans in hiring and promotions, with subsequent breakdowns by disabled veterans, able-bodied veterans, and veteran spouses. Currently, Minnesota provides limited preference for hiring and promotion in state and local government positions, but the legislature to this point has not chosen to include their human resources departments in this practice. We welcome the opportunity to work with the legislature to develop this. We're excited to see an expansion of more opportunities for veterans to work in state government. That is all that I have for comments at this time. I do have our agency's Veterans Preference Officer, Mr. Dennis Devereaux, available if there are any technical questions, but I'm happy to take questions from the members of the committee or chair at this time. Thank you.
Okay. Members, any questions at all? Anyone from the audience that wishes to testify to this bill? Representative Poston, I just have some questions.
Sure.
And I'm not sure if you have some of the answers to this, but would this apply then to any of the appointed positions that the speaker makes whether it's to citizen like LCCMR or any of those organizations? How does that work for appointments that the speaker is responsible for? Mr. Johnson, I don't know if you know that or who's the best. Representative Poston?
Madam Chair, I do not believe it applies to that, but I would have to check that.
Mr. Gehring, do you know?
Madam Chair and committee members, since I don't off the top of my head know the answer, I mean, I see in the bill that it refers to vacant positions. There's not a definition of what a position means, and so it could be read to include just employees of the legislature, or you could also read it to include other positions that are legislatively designated. So I think it's unclear the way the bill is drafted right now.
Okay. All right, Mr. Johnson.
Chair Anderson, members, Mr. Devereaux has indicated that it would not apply to the appointed positions.
Okay. All right. We should maybe talk about this a little bit more at some point. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to commend Representative Poston for bringing fresh materials to the committee. They're much appreciated.
Representative Demmer.
I'm going to swallow this cookie first, Madam Chair.
Got you.
The fresh cookie, yes. Mr. Johns, could you explain maybe to the committee just what is a veteran's preference?
Mr. Johnson?
Chair Anderson, Representative Detmer, if you want the short answer, I can give you that. If you'd like a little bit more in-depth answer, then I prefer Mr. Devereaux.
Madam Chair, I think sometimes people don't understand exactly what we mean by veterans' preference, and maybe a short answer might do it for us.
Mr. Johnson?
Chair Anderson, Representative Demmer, what the veterans' preference statutes allow is that individuals applying for a position with states, local, county, municipalities, other political subdivisions, if you are a recently separated veteran, specifically since 9/11, or a service-connected disabled veteran or a veteran spouse, the breakdown is that once basic minimum qualifications for a position are met, an applicant who chooses may receive credit of 10 extra points. These are veterans' preference points for a position, which would put them in better standing against non-veteran applicants. Service-connected disabled veterans may receive 15 extra points. Spouses of deceased or disabled veterans who cannot qualify because of their disability may also choose to receive extra points. That's in the case of hiring. In the case of discharge, which 1318 does not apply to, discharge means that veterans' preference, a veteran may petition for a hearing through a collective bargaining grievance process or a veterans preference hearing. So if there is a move to discharge a veteran from their public position, they have the option of seeking assistance through the veterans preference process.
Representative Detmer?
Yeah, Madam Chair, and I think people need to understand just because you have a veterans preference doesn't mean you're going to get the job. It means that, you know, you have some abilities there, some characteristics there that might help you, but doesn't guarantee that you're going to get the job. It's just maybe get your foot in the door as a veteran. And I think that's a good explanation.
Mr. Johnson, how would it work in the case for the legislature? We have the House and the Senate, and we have partisan and nonpartisan positions. How would it work for the legislature in that role? And maybe Mr. Devereaux can come up. I would seek some assistance. Yes. Thank you, Chair. Great. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is Dennis Devereaux. I'm the Veteran Preference Officer for the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. As to how this might be applied in the case of the legislature and the courts, the wording is very similar to the state system, and that state system is limited to open competitive positions. As far as partisan appointed type positions, they would not necessarily be covered under this new bill.
Okay. All right. I got a couple other questions. Representative Kunesh Podin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So at this time, the legislature does not have this veterans preference, but is it a state preference at, or a veterans preference at the state, county, city levels? Do they all make, do most of them also have this sort of system set up?
Mr. Devereaux?
Madam Chair, Representative. Currently, the state law deals with state agencies and with local units of government, that is city, county, school district, township, et cetera. So each of those governmental units are required to apply veteran preference in their open competitive hiring practices. Currently the court system and the legislature, as well as the University of Minnesota, the state retirement system, and the Minnesota Historic Society, veteran preference does not apply in those cases.
Representative
Gunnar-Bodine? Let's say that there was a reduction in the workforce in the legislature. Would they have sort of a protected status or as far as being laid off or let go, or how would that work?
Well, if I remember correctly, this only applies to the hiring, correct? Is that right, Mr.
Madam Chair, Representative? That is correct. There would be no additional protection under this bill for layoff or termination circumstances.
Representative Kunesh-Bodine?
That was it. Thank you very much. Thank you for your information.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a great bill. I'm glad to see it coming before us and everything else. I have a question about the preference for spouses. I think that's a wonderful thing, and I can just imagine how some of the spouses may struggle with a deceased veteran or an injured veteran and things. Just a point of curiosity, how many spouses are able to take advantage of this at the current time?
Mr. Devereaux?
Madam Chair, Representative? There's no reporting requirement from state agencies or local governments, so we don't have exact figures. Anecdotally, I get questions quite often about eligibility for spouses, and I can assume that they are using this and applying veteran preference when they are seeking employment.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad to see that it's a successful program.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Devereaux. Representative Poston, do you have any further comments? Or
no further comments, Madam Chair. I just appreciate your support.
Okay. With that, members, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1318 be referred to the Committee on Public Safety. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, your bill is on its way. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
And thanks for the treats. We never get that, honestly. So, nice. With that, members, I think that covers it, right, John? I got it all.